people hear the name Gary Wright, the first thing they think about, of course, is Love is Alive and Dreamweaver and that huge year you had in 1976. But you're also looked at as kind of a pioneer in the keyboard. I mean, you did things with the keyboard, and you still do things with, you know, piano and the keyboard that not many other musicians can do. What was your inspiration? How did you kind of come across the keyboard? How did it become, you know, your baby?
I guess from having played, you know, in Spooky Tooth, that's when it started. I was playing on organ and played some piano. And then when I started to do sessions, when I was living in England, playing with George Harrison, and then slowly I got introduced to Moog synthesizers, and I had one of those, and a Fender clavinet, and a Hohner clavinet, and a Rhodes, and I used these instruments live during the last kind of touring days of Spooky Tooth, and I kind of really got into that a lot. And when I actually started writing the songs for the Dreamweaver album, I used all those instruments with delays and stuff and echo and rhythm machines to actually create a kind of a tapestry onto which I could you know put my songs against. And so I didn't actually think about doing it. It just kind of evolved.
Okay, speaking of Spooky Tooth, I mean, that's kind of a band that not many people today are too familiar with, but I mean, you guys played a huge role in rock and roll history. I mean, when you think about it, you know, Mick Jones ended up going to Foreigner, and then you have Ariel Bender, who played with Keith Emerson and Mata Hoople, and then you have all these other...
Greg Ridley and Humble Pie?
Yeah, Greg Ridley and Humble Pie, absolutely. So you guys all got around it. You know, you had those two huge hits in 1976, and you've played with George Harrison, and now you're playing, you know, with Ringo Starr, and you guys were all around. What was it like? And I mean, also kind of interesting, were you the only American in that band? Because I know you were in college at the time, so what was that like?
No, I was the only American.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. It was a totally new experience. All of a sudden, being submerged into British rock and roll culture at that time, it was great. It was really a super creative environment to be in. It was a small music scene. It wasn't like here. You know, you have 3,000 miles coast to coast. England's a small country. You can drive up and down it in several hours. And so, you know, you've got a really good sense of, you know, the English taste and stuff like that. And my whole kind of approach to writing and creating came from more that standpoint where there was a real big focus on the direction of the music, not so much, you know, how good a player you were, but the direction of the music and all the different ingredients that fell into place. It was very well thought out.
Okay, I mean, Spooky Tooth's music is absolutely endured. I mean, Judas Priest covered better than me. How does that feel to know that a band like that covered your stuff 25
better by,
years?
Better by you, better than me. Yeah, it's always nice to know that, you know, bands cover your material. Joe Cocker did Love Is Alive. Anastasia did Love Is Alive. Maya did Love Is Alive. You know, a bunch of rappers, Helen Loke, Third Bass. They've sampled my music, Salt and Pepper. I've been very fortunate to have my music, you know, memorialized that way, you know, by other artists having done it. And it's you know, it's a good feeling to know that people are into your music and covering it.
Yeah, absolutely. As well, I mean, Dreamweaver has been in a ton of movies. I mean, how does that feel whenever you watch a movie and you see Dreamweaver? How does that make you feel?
I love it. It's great. So long as I turn down bad usages. If somebody wants to use it in a kind of a way that's derogatory, I always say no.
I mean, you've worked with a ton of other talented musicians. Like, I had no idea about this until recently, but Ronnie Montrose played guitar on Dreamweaver. What was it like working with
him? Not on the song Dreamweaver, on the album. He played on a song called Power of Love.
Okay, what was it like working with somebody like that?
Well, Ronnie was great. I had known Ronnie because he used to, his band, which was called Montrose, in the early 70s when Spooky Tooth were touring, they used to open for us when Sammy Hagar was the lead singer of Montrose.
And also, I mean, it's been documented your relationship with George Harrison. How did you guys eventually hook up?
That was done through a friend of mine, Klaus Voormann, who knew the Beatles from Hamburg, Germany. He was German, and he was in the Plastic Ono band, and he lived actually with George and played on a bunch of stuff that George had done. He called me and said, George is doing a solo album, and he needs another keyboard player. Do you want to come down? I said, sure. And I went down to the session, and there was Ringo and Eric Clapton and Billy Preston and the guys from Badfinger, and I can't even remember who else that first day was there, but a lot of people. And I went into the studio, and I played on the first song, which was Isn't It a Pity, and George liked it and asked me to come back, and I wound up playing on the entire album, and we became really close friends.
Okay, great. As far as, like, after that, 1976 rolls around, and that was, you know, that was a huge year for you. You had two top five Billboard hits. You were on Don Kirshner's Rock Concert. You were on Midnight Special, two huge shows back then. What was 1976 like for you?
Oh, it was like a crazy year. It was good, but it was crazy. You know, it was like everybody tearing at you from all sides at the same time, wanting this, wanting that, wanting this, and then I had all these concerts. It was great. I mean, I have to admit, it's a shame that a lot of young bands coming up through the ranks today didn't have a chance to experience the music business at its heyday, which was back then, when there were unlimited budgets and, you know, and they would do great things. The record labels back then had, you know, tons of money, and it was really a great thing. You know, the sky was the limit, but, you know, you wanted to have, you know, I'd go on stage, and as I was getting on stage, there'd be an airplane flying overhead, skywriting the Dreamweaver, you know, and things like that, and releasing helium balloons, multicolored, you know, as the song started. It was just great. It was really, really great, playing to those huge audiences. I must have played to several million people that one summer alone, because we were playing places like RFK and JFK, sold out, 125,000 people with myself, Peter Frampton, Yes, Fleetwood Mac, and, you know, we'd all do shows like that together, and it was great.
How does that take a toll on you? I mean, just playing concerts that much, that often?
It does wear you out physically. You know, you have to kind of look at being on the road as like you're an athlete in training. You know, if you burn yourself out and do a lot of drugs and stay up all night, you're not going to last very long. But I was disciplined, and I didn't do that. And I, you know, I looked after myself, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the experience.
Okay, so I saw on the press release that it says you haven't put out a rock pop album in 20 years. What have you been doing since then musically?
Well, I put out other albums. They were more the world music focus. I was really into world music for a while. I did one in 1995 called First Signs of Life, which was a kind of a Brazilian African album. Then I did another one in 99 called Human Love. That was more of like Indian influenced. It was kind of a mixture of being like kind of rock and world music. And then then I put out a kind of an ambient music album in 07 called Waiting to Catch the Light. And then I've released various singles as well on just digitally on iTunes. But I wanted to go in and do an album that was more kind of like in the spirit of how I made Dreamweaver, which is very sparsely done, very sparse production, but with really cool grooves and really great songs. That's how I approached this album, Connected, the new one.
Yeah, I was going to say Connected kind of feels much more like your older stuff. Was that your inspiration behind that? Like, let me get back to the way that I was before, let me get back to basics?
Yeah, I mean, in the production aspect, absolutely. The writing, obviously, was different, you know, because my singing's different because I've evolved in that way as an artist. But I just wanted to keep it, I didn't want to have it overproduced.
Okay, how do you think you've changed as a musician over the years?
Well, I'd like to think I've gotten much better. I think I have. I think my singing's better now. My playing is better. It's, you know, you kind of mature, you know, like a wine. You lay a wine down on a shelf for like years and you drink it. It's like, wow, it tastes better, you know. It matures.
Okay, so how do you think you've gotten better aside from, you know, your singing? What do you think was wrong with the way you played back then?
I don't think it wasn't that anything was wrong. It was different. You know, my voice when you was different. It wasn't as developed. I haven't sang as much as now I do. And so my voice now, I think I can use it more as an instrument, whereas back then I couldn't use it quite as much as I wanted it as I wanted to use it, you know. And it's just like a guitar, you know. You have some of these old guitars that just sound great, and you have new ones which are okay, but they just don't sound quite the same. It's a process of maturity, I guess.
Okay. Aside from the first single that came out on the album. Can you just take us through the rest of the tracks? Or, I mean, if you want, we could talk about all the tracks, just how you came about them in the songwriting process.
Well, the first single, Satisfied, that I wrote a while back with a friend of mine, Bobby Hart. Bobby was the writer and producer of the Monkees back in the 60s, and he has written such big hits like Hurt So Bad and Come a Little Bit Closer and a bunch of other things. He's been nominated for Academy Awards. He's a really terrific writer. I had this song that was just kind of like just a groove. It was a totally different groove than the way it turned out. It was a shuffle. And I decided to write with Bobby, and we came up with this title, Satisfied, and it was kind of a positive, kind of uplifting kind of song. But it was in a shuffle. Then when I got into the studio, and I was working on this one particular piece, a lot of times I'll just pull up a sound, like a drum groove and a pattern, kind of a rhythmic pattern with one of my synthesizers, and I'll start to sing a melody. And as I was doing this, all of a sudden that song popped into my mind, and I thought, I wonder if I could fit that into this groove. And it turned out that I can. I switched it from a shuffle to a swing groove. And so it turned out it worked in my favor. And then I decided to ask Ringo if he wanted to play drums, and he agreed to do it. And he played drums on it, and I asked Joe Walsh if he wanted to lay a guitar solo down, and he did that. And Skunk Baxter came by and played a rhythm guitar part, so all the elements kind of came together in a real cool way.
Okay, what are your hopes for this new album?
Well, I want to reach as many people as I possibly can. That's really the purpose of music, is to get out there and reach as many people as you can, and get them to get the record.
Okay, you have any thoughts for the future, like after this album, any plans on a tour or anything like that?
Well, I'm touring with Ringo this summer, 30 different markets. Then I'm going to probably do some touring in Europe in the fall, as well as in the United States with my own band doing my own shows. I just had come back a few weeks ago in late April, having done about 5 shows in the East Coast. So that's my plan. I'll be doing some more touring. Next year, I think I might even write a book.
Wow, what about, like, just about your life in rock?
Yeah, exactly, my life.
Is there any interesting stories you care to share here that you would think that people would be interested in as far as the book goes?
Well, you know, there's loads and loads and loads of stories that I have of people that I've met and hung out with over the years that are kind of interesting. A lot of people don't know about how I found the title Dreamweaver. I was, George Harrison and I went, George invited me to go to India with him as Ravi Shankar's guest in 1974. And as a means of kind of introducing me to the philosophy of India, he gave me some books on Indian philosophy, one of which was a book by an Indian yogi named Paramahansa Yogananda. And it was called Songs of the Soul. And so I was reading it one night, and I was reading this one poem, and the lines of the poem went, "When at night my mind weaves dreams, on that sacred cloth do I emboss the words God, God, God." And I looked at that, and I went, wow. And I wrote down in my writing journal, Dreamweaver. I then, put that away, and, about a year or so later, after we had gone to India and come back, I was out in the English countryside, and I had my acoustic guitar with me, and I was wanting to write a song, and I was looking around, and I saw that title, Dreamweaver, and I just wrote the song in about half an hour, 45 minutes, maybe an hour, put it away, and kind of didn't really think about it. And then when I was starting to record the songs for my album, that was one of the ones that I did. It was the very last song that was chosen. I was in the studio with myself, David Foster, who played Rhodes on that track, and Jim Kelton, who played drums. That was the rhythm section, and me. And I said to David, "I've got these two songs. Which one do you think we should choose for the album?" And he listened to both of them. He went, Dreamweaver. I went, okay, great. And then he helped me come up, actually, with the feel, kind of the slow shuffle. So, and it was the last track, and never thought it would be a single or anything, so I went wild with all the electronic effects, thinking I'll just get real super creative on this track.
Yeah.
And then it winds up being the single.
So how did it end up getting the, wasn't that the title track on the album?
The title track was The Dreamweaver.
Oh, I see.
I mean, no, the title track was Dreamweaver, but the album title was The Dreamweaver.
Oh, I see. I got
yeah.
you. That song, like, remember that song, because, I mean, it's entrenched in pop culture. I mean, have you ever gotten, like, a crazy story as anyone? Because I'm sure it's got to be hundreds of wedding songs. Has anyone ever told you, like, a very interesting story or just something that kind of, like, made you stop and say, wow, that happened because of my song?
I think the deepest and the most profound things were when I got emails from people that said, you know, I was about to kill myself and commit suicide, but I listened to your music a lot and it kind of helped me through, and I did, and it healed me. That really, really touched me, because that's, to me, that's what music is all about. It's healing and helping people, not negative. And I always try to make my music positive that way.
Okay, is there anything else that you want to say about your album or anything that we haven't touched?
Well, I think there's a bunch of really interesting things on the album that I think, you know, there's some really nice tracks. As I mentioned, Joe Walsh played on Satisfied. He also played on another track called You Make Me Feel Better. And Skunk Baxter played on another track on the album called Give Me Some Time. And he played a solo on it as well. I think it's really a cool thing. I'm actually doing something kind of really cool on my website. I'm releasing a USB necklace, which means it's like a little, you know what USBs are, those thumb drives you stick in, like a synthesizer.
Yeah, like a flash drive, yeah.
Flash drive, exactly.
Uh-huh.
So this little kind of necklace will have the ohm symbol on it, and it'll have a little flash drive inside it. And the flash drive will contain my album, the new album, Connected. It'll also contain some vintage pictures, you know, slideshows and things. And it will also have the original demo recording of Dreamweaver with me on acoustic guitar and several other tracks when I first wrote the song. So it'll be kind of interesting for fans to hear that.
Wow.
As well as a video that I did with George Harrison and a bunch of other surprises.
What was your inspiration behind that?
Well, I just, we had seen it a couple of years ago I went to England to do the 50th anniversary of Island Records, and that was one of the presents they gave to everybody, was this little flash drive with all the different music from the different artists that were on the show. So that was my inspiration. I thought that's a great idea, so I'm going to sell that now on my website, probably at my concerts.